Chapter 3, Looking Inward, Employees, Suppliers, Investors. Chapter 3, Part A, Learning Objectives. After reading this chapter, you should be able to understand the three ways to become vested in a company and differentiate between the three kinds of stakeholders. Analyze employee types, strategies to motivate employees, and employees' rights, as described by international agreement and U.S. law. Describe the various kinds of suppliers, ways to motivate suppliers, and suppliers' rights. Summarize the types of investors, ways to motivate investors, and the rights of shareholders and owners. Summarize shareholder activism. Introduction. Chapters 1 and 2 introduced the idea of stakeholders and stakeholder analysis and showed how corporate social responsibility can originate from or spread through social networks. This chapter examines stakeholders who are internal to the corporation. Specifically, it focuses on three different kinds of stakeholders: employees, suppliers, and owners or market stockholders. To reflect the complex nature of business, the chapter also addresses how the lines blur between different types of stakeholders who are financially or emotionally connected to the modern corporation. For example, some employees are also owners, and some owners are also suppliers. These arrangements can create complex governing problems for the corporation. Such complexity increases when owners and employees have certain legal rights. To illustrate how CSR includes and sometimes begins with taking care of internal stakeholders, the chapter examines how various regulations and laws currently protect both owners and employees. In order to deal with the complexities of corporate governance and the desire for many corporate stakeholders to create more than just wealth, we also examine different corporate offerings. Specifically, we look at programs such as employee stock ownership plans that enable employee-owned firms, and we investigate benefit corporations as a new form of corporation. These two options alter the corporate governance scene and the way that firms relate to communities and stakeholders. Taken together, the information in the chapter begins to define the current context for CSR and sustainability efforts and reveals key CSR and sustainability opportunities for leaders and managers. Vesting and corporate ownership. What does it mean to vest in a company, or to have a vested interest? A vested interest refers to having personal stake or involvement in a firm. Often, having a personal stake means being or becoming an owner or part owner. Of course, anyone working with or for a firm can have a vested interest if the person has a chance to benefit when the firm succeeds. For example, employees and suppliers can have a vested interest in a company because they receive payment or another benefit from the company. However, to be vested in a firm has an additional meaning that is typically associated with purchasing stock. Most large companies are publicly traded, meaning that small pieces of company ownership in the form of stock can be exchanged in return for cash. In such cases, the many and varied individuals and institutions that own shares in the company actually own the company together. Before the rise in new employee incentives related to stock ownership, there were only two kinds of stakeholders vested in corporations: financial investors and owners. Now, in the age of globalization and with an increase in firms where managers reward employees with a mixture of wages, plus the promise of staged future ownership with stock options, there are at least three categories of people vested in corporations: employees, owners or investors, and suppliers. See Figure 3.1 in your text. Such ownership distinctions matter in a book on sustainability and CSR for several reasons. First, by definition, people vested in a firm tend to care more deeply about how it behaves. Secondly, people who are vested in a firm become partially responsible, legally and morally, for how it behaves. Some people, typically employees, have a vested interest in the firm, even if they do not technically own the firm outright or have stock or stock options. Finally, people vested in a firm also comprise key stakeholders. See Chapter 2 in your text. So considering their voice is part of running a sustainable and socially responsible business. The following sections describe different types of vested stakeholders. Vested employees. Employees constitute the first type of people vested in a corporation. One way employees vest in the corporation is by bringing talent, skills, labor, time, and in the best cases, loyalty and commitment to the workplace. Another way employees vest in a corporation is by purchasing stock, a topic discussed later in this chapter. Most companies pay employees every 2 weeks or monthly, with bonuses paid out quarterly, annually, or semi-annually. The anticipation of future benefits, financial, social, reputational, learning, or other, allows employees to commit to giving their time and talent to a commercial enterprise. Vested suppliers. Suppliers represent another type of entity that can become vested in a company. A supplier is another company or corporation that provides the company with appropriate parts, inventory, and/or service inputs required for the company to create its products and services. It may sound surprising to suggest that a supplier would be vested in a client, but this is certainly the case if you follow the financial logic. The supplier vests in the future of a client's company in anticipation of ongoing financial reward in the form of continued sales, increased sales, or sales referrals. Suppliers, or the parent companies that own and manage supplier companies, can purchase a formal stake in the future of companies they serve by buying large amounts of stock, or by forming legally binding partnerships. Thus, suppliers have a range of options in terms of their degree of vested interest, but by definition, any supplier to a firm has a vested interest in it. Vested owners or investors. Another way individuals develop a vested interest in a company relates to investing money as owners, part owners, or non-equity investors. Investors with no ownership rights, but with other rights as negotiated at the time of investment. Investors provide a business or project with funding or other resources, and in return they expect a financial benefit. An owner of a company invests in the company for a variety of reasons, but the most common relates to securing rights to future financial benefits in the form of increased stock price. Investors and owners provide capital, absorb risk, and over time expect a return on that investment. Investors also provide resources because they believe in the company's mission or vision or its product or service, and they want to see the venture succeed. Not every investor is focused solely on financial returns. One defining feature of CSR and corporate sustainability relates to how both topics expand the idea of value and responsibility to spheres beyond the financial. As mentioned, investors, employees, and suppliers invest in, work for, or supply a firm for financial reasons, or for non-financial reasons, such as believing in the mission, the management, or the technology or service. In many businesses, owners and investors work in the business, or, at the very least, actively advise the firm. A typical image of an investor is a Wall Street tycoon, distant from the place where work is done. However, most businesses in the United States are small businesses, and owners and investors often work alongside employees to enhance the business's product or service. Each category of person possibly vested in a corporation differs in relationship to the company, and perhaps in terms of the amount invested or the ease of access to speak with and influence management. In the following sections, we look at the unique relationships each group has with the corporation. The relationships differ by category, and thus the opportunity and best ways to engage each one differs too. Employees. In the 21st century, corporate managers view workers differently than they typically did in the past. Also, employees increasingly have different types of commitments to firms. For example, in technology firms and many new non-technical startups, employees are seen as family, essential members of a work community. Employees often feel the same way about the firm. Modern companies show more commitment to employees than they did in previous decades, in part because there are fewer choices for substitutes, at least in sectors that employ skilled workers. Many technological problems require specific technical expertise that is rare or unavailable in the broader market. Consider the skills of computer programmers, coders, and systems engineers. These skills are specialized and not evenly distributed among the job-seeking population. Other industries face similar situations. Medical personnel have technical training and are currently in high demand by employers. Over time, specific industries create specialists and subspecialists, and employees and employers in these industries develop new interdependencies. One worker can no longer be easily substituted for another. Employees in such situations also persist in working for the company's success because the employee's financial future depends on it, especially when his or her specialization is so specific that the employee cannot find other work without significant retraining. The employer needs the relationship to persist because firms cannot easily or inexpensively find a replacement in the labor market. For example, many software companies and medical service firms continually adjust to market needs by training current employees on anticipated future needs and providing employees with incentives to stay at the company. Types of employees. Most firms categorize employees in ways that relate to federal employment regulations. In most firms, there are four basic categories of employees: full-time, part-time, independent contractors, and informal employees. Full-time employees. Full-time employees work either hourly or on a salary. Hourly employees in the United States are typically required by law to spend 30 to 40 hours a week performing their work duties. Salaried full-time employees differ from hourly full-time employees in that they have a contractually defined responsibility. They must manage that responsibility and complete associated tasks in exchange for a monthly paycheck, no matter how many hours they work. Sometimes, they might be able to complete requirements in under 30 to 40 hours a week, and at other times, they may work more than this amount. Unlike hourly employees, salaried employees generally do not track work time in any formal way and typically cannot earn more by working more hours. Another difference between the two relates to the fact that full-time salaried employees generally receive health, retirement, and other benefits paid for or partially subsidized by the company. Part-time employees. The second kind of employee is a part-time employee. He or she is generally paid by the hour. Part-time employees generally work less than 30 hours per week and do not receive company-provided or company-subsidized benefits, although there are some exceptions. For example, the Starbucks Corporation has received significant press coverage for its decision to offer health benefits and tuition reimbursement to part-time employees. Part-time employees have a variety of reasons for choosing to work part-time, including preferring the work arrangement and the flexibility, or wanting to sample work environments at different places. Employers who take better care of part-time and full-time employees can become employers of choice and can likely select from a large applicant pool. Independent contractors. The third kind of employee is an independent contractor. An independent contractor works when contacted for a specific skill or project. He or she works for a specific amount of time and for a specified salary or hourly wage. There is typically no expectation that the employment arrangement will extend past the life of the project or specified time. Note that when someone builds a house or other structure with a specific builder, the builder then contracts or subcontracts with skilled people, or many different ones, to complete the various specialized tasks related to building the structure within a specified time frame and quality level. In most cases, no builder can possibly perform all required tasks with equal skill, speed, and precision as what can be accomplished by various specialists hired for the tasks. The same logic applies to building a corporation or other organization, and the reasons a corporation might seek contract employees are the same. Some people have a specific skill set for doing a certain job, and they should be paid to perform that job, but not remain associated with the company once the job is complete. A contract employee is not considered an employee in current U.S. legal terms. But in modern, non-construction firms, contract employees may provide accounting, payroll, janitorial, marketing, consulting, or other specialized services. An independent contractor might also be someone who works seasonally. Informal employees. The fourth and final kind of employee is the informal consenting employee. This person might be a friend, spouse, intern, or volunteer. Regardless of the relationship, the informal employee also comes to the corporation to help complete a task. Informal employees are not legally considered employees and thus have fewer rights and protections than formal employees. Note that informal employees are not the same as illegal ones. Illegal employees are those who do not have legal documentation to work in the United States or the country of interest. Therefore, any firm that accepts, demands, or pays for such labor is breaking the law. Often, informal employees with legal documentation do not receive wages, such as in the case of unpaid internships, where people work in exchange for experience rather than money. Or they receive minimal wages. Informal employees may receive non-wage benefits, such as insurance coverage, as is the case with volunteer firefighters in most U.S. states, or benefits such as experience and industry exposure, or positive personal references, common benefits of unpaid internships. Every type of employee has a different relationship with the corporation, and the working assumption is that the closer and more financially direct the relationship with the employee, the deeper the engagement. It can generally be assumed that the full-time employee has a deeper engagement with the corporation, and that the part-time, informal, or contract worker has less of a commitment to the corporation's future. Full-time employees tend to stay longer, be paid more, and have financial and promotion futures more directly tied to the future of the corporation. Figure 3.2 in your text shows the range of relationships that corporations have with the types of employee stakeholders vested in the corporation. As the figure indicates, many different options exist. An employee might be a partial owner. A contract employee might also be a supplier. A part-time employee might have a spouse or partner who is employed full-time at the same place. It is important people understand the wide number of options that now exist in the modern work environment. Anyone interested in CSR and sustainability, particularly regarding employees and employee rights, needs to keep a close eye on the many different ways firms define the concept of employee and owner. Motivating employees. Corporate managers understand the importance of motivating their highest quality workers to have a long-term commitment to the firm. The costs to attain new talent vary by job and industry type, but the costs associated with turnover can be avoided when committed people stay with the firm. Similarly, many workers prefer a stable, reliable, and involved connection with a firm. In some ways, many corporate actions that fall into the category of being socially responsible or sustainable stem from this mutual desire to increase the quality, reliability, and longevity of the connection between employee and employer. One innovation that results from this mutual interest relates to experiments and innovations with employee ownership. End of Chapter 3, Part A.